Just by show of hands, how many people have heard of Sierra Leone? Oh, that makes it easy. Okay, and how many people, when you think about Sierra Leone or African countries in general, think about, like, what would you think about as, you know, the major healthcare problems? Would you think about diarrheal illnesses? Just show of hands. Would you think about arthritis? Would you think about diabetes? Okay, so that's good. So I have no relationships to disclose. So my objectives are to kind of go over some of the burdens of communicable and non-communicable diseases on the healthcare systems in African countries, focusing on Sierra Leone in particular, my home country, and look at the feasibility of screening for chronic disease in outpatient clinics. My interest in this area came from just really listening to relatives and friends talk about, you know, what you're seeing in the hospitals. I have a lot of friends that are physicians there, relatives who talk about, oh, you know, so-and-so had a stroke, so-and-so, you know, has diabetes, so-and-so is having issues with, you know, this medical problem or that chronic medical problem. And I never really thought too much about, you know, hypertension and diabetes and things like that sort of problems. You know, I know about the maternal and, you know, infant mortality, the infectious diseases. So it kind of got me thinking. So my fourth year of medical school, I did an elective and went back home to kind of really get an idea of what was going on and, you know, figure out what I could do as my part. So just a brief geography and history for, you know, maybe those who don't know. Sierra Leone has a population of about 5 million people, but 1.4 of them live in the capital. The size of the country is about 71,000 square kilometers, just about the size of South Carolina. The doctor to population ratio is about 1 to 42,000. So it's a major issue. And I think like nurse to paramedic to population ratio is about 1 to 3,000. I think WHO standards for developing countries for doctor to population is 1 to 12,000. So we're really behind. Chronic disease in Africa is something that is being talked about much. Now it's starting to be talked about, but there's still not a lot that has been done about it, as far as I can tell. So WHO estimates about 2.4 million deaths from chronic diseases in Africa. 28 million are projected to die over the next 10 years. And based on the current trends, they're expecting deaths from chronic diseases to outstrip those from infectious diseases, maternal and perinatal, all the things that, you know, all the funding right now is being focused on. So there's definitely a push to kind of intervene early before we see this epidemic. So global prevalence of hypertension, about 950 million people, and 65% of those people live in developing countries. That's a huge burden for countries who are still struggling to deal with malaria and diarrhea, getting clean water, and just even accessing healthcare facilities. In sub-Saharan Africa, we're talking about 70, 80 million people with hypertension, and the most common complication that's been cited is stroke, and mortality from stroke is really, really high. Some studies that have been done in places like Ghana that have a more established healthcare system talk about a 40% mortality from stroke within, you know, within a few days of presenting to the hospital. And as far as diabetes is concerned, the International Diabetes Federation collects most of the data on diabetes, not just in Africa, but in all other parts of the country. And they talk about 10.4 million adults that's over the age of 19 in 2007 that have diabetes. And the number is expected to increase about 80% in the next 15 years. So just some of the numbers that are out there. Numbers for diabetes are as low as 1.1% prevalence in countries like Rwanda and as high as 12.6% in places like Reunion and Seychelles. South Africa has about 4.5%. So this didn't come out too well. But this is just the causes of death, estimated causes of death in Sierra Leone in 2004. There's a huge problem getting actually accurate data on causes of death because the registries are not really kept up. So this is WHO data that I kind of ranked based on numbers. And you can see cardiovascular disease is up there, And we're talking mostly hypertension, rheumatic heart disease, and things like that. Respiratory diseases like COPD, tobacco-related, it's not too far down. It's number 10. Diabetes is still down in 14, but there's not very good data. So that might actually be underestimation because causes of death are not, you know, necessarily accurate. Very, very few studies on chronic disease have been done in Sierra Leone. Not just chronic disease, a lot of things, but especially chronic disease, there are very few studies that have been done. And of those, maybe only half of them have actually been published. I was lucky to get my hands on a couple of studies that were not published just by talking to people and getting their dissertations and reading them. So one study in 1997 showed a 2.4% prevalence of diabetes, and this was in one of the southern urban cities that this was done. And in 2009, a medical student did her dissertation and did a screening study of one population in the capital city and got a 6.5% prevalence of diabetes in that area. Obesity, 5% in one study in 1997 and up to 25% in the capital city. Hypertension, this study was done in 1999, and I think that was the study that WHO still kind of cites on their website. That study showed a 14.7% rural rate and a 23% urban. However, when the study was done, they were still using the old definition of hypertension, which was a blood pressure over 160 over 90. And the current is now 140. So you can see how that number is, you know, will be much different when you actually do the study now. And as far as diabetes data, the International Diabetes Federation has estimates of 3.8% prevalence of diabetes in Sierra Leone and a projected increase to 4.1% by 2025. That data is not actually from studies done in Sierra Leone. That is extrapolated data from similar countries. So that also may be an underestimation. So what I did was just a pilot study to see whether it was, you know, really doable to actually screen for these diseases. The problem is people go to the clinics, you know, for episodic care, usually for, you know, diarrheal illnesses, fever, malaria. And chronic care model is not really incorporated into the clinics. Continuity of care is not something that's actually available. So this was, I was looking at, you know, could this be an opportunity when people come from for episodic care to actually check and see, do they have diabetes? In America, if you go to your doctor, you get your blood pressure checked. I don't care what you go for. You know, you go to get forms filled, you probably get your blood pressure checked. That's not the case over there. You know, you hardly get blood pressure checked unless, you know, the physician or the healthcare worker actually feels that, you know, they should. So I did looked at two sites, two ambulatory clinics. One was a government clinic in the capital city. It's a military hospital, but they also care for civilian members of the soldiers. And the other was a nonprofit clinic in one of the rural towns in eastern Sierra Leone. And I basically did all the work, do resting, sitting blood pressures, did fasting blood sugars, which was a challenge because I had to get, you know, find out who came that day, who hadn't eaten, and try to establish, verify that they hadn't eaten. And if they had, you know, have them come back, convince them that it was worthwhile for them to come back the next day and fast, which, you know, even though I am from Sierra Leone, there was a little bit of a cultural problem for me that I didn't understand. And I guess here in the clinics, a lot of times patients come fasting because they expect to get some kind of blood work, and they're probably going to tell them to fast anyway. Over there, the moment I talked about doing fasting sugars, they told me, oh, you're not going to get anyone to do that. I said, why not? It's like, everyone eats before they come to see the doctor. I was like, but why? It's like, well, because when they come to see the doctor, they usually get shots, and they believe that if they're going to give you medication and you don't eat, you're going to feel dizzy. So they eat before they come to see the doctor. Trying to convince them that they shouldn't eat is really a big problem. So that was a major challenge for me, you know, and I had very little time, but... You know, it was hard, but it worked. We did height and weight and waist circumference also. And so this is some of the numbers that I got. Most of my time I spent in Freetown, and so most of my the people that were screened came from there. But basically, as you can see, I had 12 people from Freetown with blood pressures in the hypertensive range, 9 in Connell, which is the rural area, blood pressures. So basically almost a 50% hypertension prevalence among those people that were screened, which is a lot. And most of these people, well, this doesn't include the number of people who already knew they had hypertension. Those are not included in the numbers that took them out. These are people who've not had their blood pressure checked, had no idea they had blood pressure. And some of them had blood pressure ranges in the 160s. For the diabetes screening, after I did the screening numbers and I was looking again at, you know, data and classification, I kind of realized I haven't been trained in the United States. We're used to the ADA classification, and those are the numbers that we use to classify diabetes. However, most of, you know, the world, especially developing countries, use the WHO classification. I had to figure out why and what the difference was. The difference really is in the threshold of what, you know, is called prediabetes, which will be a risk factor for developing diabetes in the next few years. The ADA uses a lower threshold versus WHO, and the WHO recently reviewed their guidelines in, I believe, in 2007 and decided to stick with their standards, because when you use the ADA classification, you can see the numbers are higher for people with prediabetes, which is fine. We're in a resource-rich country where you can intervene early, give them, you know, do all the interventions, medication, exercise, and all that to prevent diabetes. But in resource-poor countries, there's not much that you can offer people with, you know, in a pre-disease state. And so they said, what's the point of having this huge number of people that have been labeled as pre, you know, chronic disease, and we're not really doing anything? There's not the resources to treat them with interventions that might be available. So they're keeping, you know, their more conservative guidelines. And it probably will work depending on what intervention that you're using. But we know that, you know, trying to intervene earlier will prevent more people from developing diabetes. So one person in each site was diagnosed with a blood sugar over 126, which would be in the diabetes range. So this was a pilot study, so it was very small, 43 patients. More of them were from the urban clinic, and it had to do with logistical issues, traveling and getting patients and talking to them and getting them to be part of the study. And since I was a one-man show, I could only be in so many places at the same time. And the screening period was short, you know, again, logistical issues, transportation, and also I was doing it within the confines of a medical school rotation. Only single measurements are done, so this would not actually be diagnostic. In real practice, you need at least a couple of measurements for you to tell patients that they have these diseases. However, for those patients that were screened and had elevated blood pressures or elevated sugars, the physicians that I worked with, referred them. I had them, you know, come in, assess the patients, and basically set up that referral for them to get continued care. So some of the things that I would like to see done definitely would be better study, a larger study on chronic disease prevalence, not only in Sierra Leone, but a lot of other countries that are lacking those studies. Definitely need for a surveillance system to monitor and see where this is going in terms of, you know, whether this really is an epidemic that is creeping up. They're doing it for, you know, infectious diseases, that it should be done also for chronic diseases. A lot of training needs to be provided for the healthcare workers. Obviously, there are not enough doctors to provide this care, but there are a lot of nursing and ancillary staff that need training, and that can be done by developing algorithms and training them how to use these algorithms to provide proper care. Public health education is important. Patients know, the public knows what stroke is, but don't necessarily understand the risk factors that contribute to that. And an integrated primary care infrastructure is absolutely essential. Obviously, resources to actually diagnose and treat. I bought the glucose strips. The hospitals didn't even have those available, so that was not even an option for them. So we'll take questions at the end.
That's very interesting. Dr. Bangura has raised the clear question now that we have to deal with both infectious and degenerative diseases in many countries throughout the world.